Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help members of the military succeed in their post-service career and life. Today's episode number 367, Advisor to the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff with John Wayne Troxell.
And throughout all of that, a key phrase I use is, do not get lost in your own museum. What I mean by that is, we've all done things in our past that we were extremely proud of and that are a big accomplishment or, you know, something that we've done that we are extremely proud of. That's all fine and dandy, but we can't be stuck in the past. So I call it, be proud of your accomplishments, be proud of what you've done, but do not get lost in your own museum, meaning admiring what you've done in the past so much that you become irrelevant and you become complacent, and in the end you become marginalized with what's going on in the current environment or the future environment.
Well, I just wrapped up my conversation with John, and I put this in a rare category of interviews where I just started taking notes for myself during the conversation. And John, as you'll hear, is such a wealth of wisdom about career success in any arena. And so I found myself, I've got a half a page to a page of notes for my own career of advice that I got from him about achieving what you want to achieve in your professional life. John, as you'll hear about, worked his way up to the pinnacle of service in the military. But more impressively, after nearly 40 years of service, he just powered through to continue to find purpose, to find a calling that pulled him towards it, and keeping more than busy with many different things, but giving back, continuing to give back after the military. So I appreciated John's example, not only in terms of his example of what a high-performing, extremely high-achieving individual looks like and what it takes to do that, but also someone who continues to redefine purpose in his life. So I imagine this interview will be extremely applicable to all of our listeners. We also, at the very end, we touch on something that is so powerful about what I would call the subconscious bias that we have for most people who serve, I would imagine, this bias and opinions and beliefs about officer and enlisted on both sides. And I think that our conversation at the end is really worthwhile about challenging those assumptions. And I hope you stick around till the very end, because we talk about that. It's one of the last things we talk about. Of course, this interview was only made possible due to the financial support of the University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Management. Back when I interviewed Matt Hesse in episode 358, that was a similarly energizing conversation. And what I said to him is, man, we were fortunate enough to receive sponsorship from the Carlson School of Management. We've got a few more interviews we can do. I'll talk to anyone you would recommend. And John is who he recommended. And so thank you to the University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Management for making this possible. I want to provide you with a little bit more information about an organization that's putting their money where their mouth is and is supporting our mission at Beyond the Uniform. So whether you're transitioning to a civilian career or continuing your military service, an MBA from Carlson at the University of Minnesota prepares you for a high-impact career in business. Carlson is committed to the veteran community and provides the benefits, experiential learning, and network to accelerate your career. In addition to a resident tuition waiver, all admitted full-time MBA military candidates receive generous scholarships and stipends to cover expenses that may not be eligible for the GI Bill. To learn more, you can visit the show notes at beyondtheuniform.org for this episode, or you can email MBA for Masters of Business Administration at UMN for University of Minnesota.edu. That's MBA at UMN.edu. Thanks. And with that, let's dive in to my conversation with John Wayne Troxell. Joining me today, just about 45 minutes south of Seattle in Lakewood, Washington, my guest today is John Wayne Troxell. John, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thank you, sir. It's an honor to be here.
So for listeners, here's a quick background on John. Before his retirement in December 2019, John advised the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Secretary of Defense for 4 years on all matters involving joint and combined total force integration, utilization, health of the force, and joint development for enlisted personnel. John enlisted in the U.S. Army in 1982. By 2020, John joined forces with FITOPS to lead the Foundation's Strategic Advisory Board, working closely with Matt Hesse from who was interviewed maybe 3 episodes before this one, and the team to help prevent and end veteran suicide. Troxell's primarily focus will be on helping FITOPS reach service members who plan to separate from the military and equip them with training prior so that when they hit the ground as a civilian, they are equipped to immediately serve their communities again, this time as personal trainers and coaches. So, John, let me just make space there. Anything you want to add or amend to that bio?
Well, I spent 37 years, 10 months, 29 days in the United States Army. And as you described, Justin, culminating as the senior enlisted advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Secretary of Defense, which is the senior enlisted person in the Department of Defense. And so I was in a unique position that I could not only get out and gain the pulse of the entire joint force, but also see soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen, active guard and reserve, out doing our nation's bidding and doing things all over the world that not only would protect our freedom and our way of life, but also assist our partners and allies. So it was just a phenomenal culmination of my almost 38 years was to spend the last 4 years spending it with the 3 million men and women that are serving worldwide.
Let's maybe start there. I'm just curious, it's such an incredible vantage point on a incredibly large population of people. What stood out to you, especially around the transition out of the military? What stood out to you as like challenges facing our military community?
So a couple things stood out to me. One, that the greatest competitive advantage the United States military has over any potential adversary is in the human domain. We have a lot of great allies and partners, but no one trains, educates, provides experiences, trusts and empowers people like the United States military. So the credentials that the men and women have that are serving are extraordinary in terms of interpersonal skills, in terms of technical skills, tactical skills, problem solving, and everything like that. That's the first thing. So you have a highly qualified man or woman that is exiting the military, regardless of what they've done in their career or what service they've served in. But then, especially if they've served for a while and they are retiring or whatever, because they've been institutionalized, they're about to enter into an environment that they don't know anything about and are uncomfortable, meaning the civilian world, the corporate world, and things like that. And so sometimes it can be difficult for service members in transition, and it can be hard to, kind of stay focused on goals outside the military like you had in, because you don't know. And so the bottom line is we have to get better across the services at preparing men and women for transition. And so that they know what they want to do when they grow up, when they're not in the military anymore. And so that they have opportunities to get out and do the things that, they would like to do. Because sometimes after years in the military and people get out, they sell themselves short and they start looking at doing things that they are overly qualified for, but because they're looking for that peace of mind that they had in the military where they knew every 1st and 15th they were going to get paid. If they had a health problem, they could go and get health care. And they knew basically through their training schedule or their deployment schedule what they were doing on any given day. Now all of a sudden you're in an environment, well, that's kind of changed. So we have the best talent that this country can provide and that the corporate world is looking for. And folks struggle sometimes with transition because of the institutionalization they've had in the military. And last, our services have to continue to get better at easing this transition so that you know, the men and women that have served can retain that same kind of purpose they had on active duty out in the corporate or business world.
We'll come back to your service in a second, but just I wanted to continue that thread. And what was your transition like after 37 years of service and after being very aware of the challenges that veterans face in that transition? What was it like for you when you took off that uniform after almost four decades?
So I knew in November of 2015 when Marine General Joe Dunford selected me to be the chairman and I was moving from South Korea to Washington, D.C. I knew I was going to serve there for 4 years. And then I knew that I had to retire because there was no other enlisted position I could go to. I was the senior enlisted guy. And so, I knew that in December of 2019, I was going to be leaving. But even though I knew that, I still didn't prepare myself the way I could have because of the nature of the job and the operational tempo I had. And then when I did finally start thinking about, hey, I better get my stuff together, and when I was about 90 days out, I got a new chairman, General Mark Milley, the current chairman, and a new Secretary of Defense, Secretary Mark Esper, and they came in, ready to go out and get after business, and they wanted me with them and everything. So I had a staff that helped me get through my transition period, but I started way too late, and I was falling at the end. And at one point, I was 10 days out from retirement, and I was in Afghanistan with the chairman and the president during Thanksgiving, feeding food or chow to the troops and everything. And 10 days later, I was out the door. But when I took off the uniform, it wasn't because mentally and emotionally I'd been preparing myself that, okay, I got 3 years left as a SEAC, 3 years left in the military. So it wasn't as hard for me to come out of the uniform. And immediately when I came out of the uniform, I latched on to Fed Ops and other organizations that support veterans in the military. So I really haven't, although I'm not wearing a uniform, I'm still giving back to our military and veterans. It's a different way of doing it. So I guess I say all that to say I absolutely miss being able to, go to places all over the world and visit troops and everything, but I have not missed one day wearing the uniform. And people will think that's weird. People will think, and some people will take offense that, I am comfortable in what I'm doing now. And because I know I'm still giving back to our military and I'm giving back to our veterans and I'm assisting in combating this veteran suicide and continuing to work to give transitioning service members purpose on the outside that they had on the inside.
It's so powerful because it seems like because you were able to find a purpose and a way to serve beyond the military, it doesn't put you in a situation where you're longing for the good old days or things like that. And that's actually, that is unique in that, when you said that, I was taken aback of like, oh, I would imagine you do miss that. And one thing I wanted to ask about is, first of all, in that last role, what was your day-to-day life like? I can only imagine the variety, but could you paint the picture for listeners of what that tempo looks like when you are operating at that high of a level?
Yeah, so the strength of being the SEAC, the Senior Enlisted Advisor, the chairman, again, you are the eyes and ears for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the senior uniformed officer in the Department of Defense, and the Secretary of Defense. And so my job was to gain the pulse of the force for them. And it's hard to do in the Pentagon, although, you know, there's 22,000 troops in the Pentagon, but, you know, the vast majority of our troops are deployed overseas. So I was traveling 270 to 280 days a year all over the world with repeat offenders like Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, Libya, Yemen, South Korea, Colombia, you name it. I was going, you know, to all the continents, and I was out visiting troops. When I'm in the Pentagon, I made it a point to make sure that I was in tune with what we were doing in terms of developing national defense strategy, national military strategy, the president and the administration's national security strategy, because I saw my job as giving the troops the why of what they were doing. So if I landed on an aircraft carrier like the Abraham Lincoln or something, and I had a all hands call, as you sailors call it, you know, in the hangar bay, that I could deliver, even though I wore an Army uniform, I could deliver the why on why the Abraham Lincoln was on a back-to-back 7 or 9 month deployment because of what was going on in the Persian Gulf with Iran and things like that. So I took that as what my role was. And because of some of these areas out there that the chairman and the secretary couldn't go, or if they did go, you know, the country would put on a huge, parade and everything for them. Somebody like me, I could go into a country under the radar, get the pulse of what was going on the ground, especially in a contentious country like Yemen or Syria or something like that, where men and women are fighting every day. I could get in there, get on the ground, get the pulse of what was going on, and that information would go directly back to the chairman and the Secretary of Defense. That's not to mean my job was to circumvent any kind of chain of command or anything like that, but I was the guy that was given real-time information to the two most strategic military leaders that the United States military had. So it was great that I could, you know, go wherever I needed to go to see the troops and things like that, that I could be in high-level meetings where General Dunford might be meeting with his counterpart from Russia or somebody like that. And that it allowed me to, you know, again, be so, intellectual because of all the briefings I sat in and all of the stuff I saw with these as I went around the world. And then 37 years of experience, you know, allowed me to give that best military advice to the chairman of the SecDef and give the why to the troops on what they were doing. Because as you know, being a former sailor, if you know what you're doing and why you're doing it, it may suck and the troops may not like it, but they'll do it. And they will do it in a fashion of excellence because they know what they're doing and why they're doing it and everything. And when the troops don't know why they're doing something, they're asked to do something, it could cause morale problems and things like that. So I felt the key thing for me was to deliver the why to the troops all over the globe.
What was it like? I've been out of the military for, 12 years now. So I kind of look at it through the business lens of like, man, there's not a lot of people I speak with, and this is the 360 something episode that I've done, but not a lot of people I talk to who can point to an organization the size of the military and say, I started at the bottom and I worked myself up to a point at which there's no higher pinnacle. Nowhere else to go from there. And I'm curious, like, I don't even know how to ask this, but like, what did that feel like after 37 years to like look back on a career and realize that you had achieved what very few people in the world are able to say in an organization of that size?
It was truly humbling. I was so blessed throughout my career. You know, I remember when I joined as an E1 out of Davenport, Iowa, my hometown, and my first duty station was Fort Bliss, Texas. And within 3 weeks, I met a young lady named Sandra Jimenez, and we got married about 8 months later. We've been married now for almost 37 years. And so when I joined the military, I initially did it to just come in, get experience, potentially get money to go to college, and then leave. But things change in life. And the minute I met this woman that I fell in love with, and we got married and we had our first child, the minute she was pregnant, I knew I had greater responsibility. And I had to make sure that I was able to take care of my family. And the military was kind of coming easy to me. You know, it was like a, you know, one of my NCOs told me a long time ago, you know, in 1983, he said, if you are where you're supposed to be, you're on time, you have a good attitude, and you're a team player, good things are going to happen. And I just kept that attitude the whole time. And as I continued to progress through the military, it was almost as if it was a drug to me. I wanted more responsibility. I wanted to challenge myself more. So I did things like, you know, I became an airborne ranger. I became a jump master. I became a pathfinder. All these things that I wanted to do. And what I realized, the more that I was excelling professionally, personally, I was able to take better care of my family. And I never once envisioned that I would even be an E-9 one day, a command sergeant major, let alone being the senior enlisted guy in the Department of Defense. So one of my mentors told me, you know, hey, when you get into a job, you just have to have the attitude, I'll do this job until somebody that tells me to do it different. And I'll do it to the best of my ability, and I will make sure that the team can depend on me and my commander can depend on me. And I just had that attitude, and it paid off as I went up. And one thing I tell, you know, I still do a lot of public speaking with military organizations. And when I tell people that are getting ready to transition, your professional military reputation as you move up in the ranks is the most important thing you have. Because as you continue to move up to the top, it starts to apex in terms of how many positions are available. When at the top, there's only one SEAC. So your reputation more so than your portfolio, because almost everybody's portfolio looks the same at that level in terms of military education, civilian education, experience, training, and stuff like that. It's what do people think of you, and can they depend on you? And I think that's what got me to where I was at. And when I had my retirement speech in Washington, D.C., I said, you know, I don't get to say what my legacy is. Okay, that's for others to say. But I would hope that my legacy would be that I was someone that was a good teammate and that people could count on me, especially when the chips were down. So now I still use that same professional military reputation. How do you take that in transition and turn it into a marketable personal brand that will be attractive to business and corporations out there? And it's tough because you've lived this career of being selfless, and now you transition out of the military, and now it's about how do you sell yourself to organizations that will be attracted to your kind of personal brand. So it's truly humbling. And, you know, that I made it all the way to the senior enlisted person in the DOD. I'm forever grateful and forever blessed for the leaders and mentors that I had that continue to kick me in the fourth point of contact to get me going in the right direction. And those that stood by me when I might have made mistakes and understood that, hey, that was a mistake. This guy can overcome it. Let's keep pushing.
There's so much good there. I just want to bookmark for our listeners. I love so much of the wisdom that you're sharing. And what I'm hearing is kind of this, the importance of reputation and being dependable. Yes. And also this sense of, you know, thriving wherever you're planted and just doing the best job you can until you're placed elsewhere. And I think that's particularly powerful because so many of the people I look at or talk to, it is always this sense of like, well, what's my side hustle? How am I going to get to the next thing? And I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that, but it goes back to a book I often talk about on the show called So Good They Can't Ignore You, where the author talks about, like, just wherever you are, crush it. Do the best you can to learn and grow. And then I also want to bookmark for listeners, you hit on something that comes up a lot on this show, and that is the incredibly big shift for every veteran that comes from selflessness and team-centric attitude to now in the corporate world being able to advocate for oneself and sell oneself. And it can often feel really slimy for a veteran if they're viewing it a certain way. And it can often cause them to miss out on opportunities if they're not able to really speak on their own behalf about what they've accomplished.
Justin, you are absolutely right. You know, one thing I see out here is, I work for a lot of great corporations, but some of them don't have the same kind of work ethic that I had in the military. And I have to be cognizant of that, and I have to be sensitive to that, you know? And so how do I want to be a good team player on this team when I might be moving a little bit too fast? Well, I go back to, hey, I've got to be a good teammate, you know? And certainly I want to make the organization better. I want to get us continuing to move into the band of excellence, but certainly I want to move at the pace that the CEOs and the COOs are comfortable with. And so I have to temper what I'm doing to make sure I fit into that corporate culture. Because if I don't, then I could find myself outcast and potentially marginalized because some folks will think that I'm trying to outdo others. So it's as much as being in the military is a thinking person's game, especially when you're trying to analyze an enemy or a situation or a problem or whatever, it's certainly compounded more on in the corporate world because you have much more human dynamics involved where, you know, being selfless and things like that aren't necessarily the forefront of what you're trying to do. And the other thing is being institutionalized from the military is that if you're not looking out for yourself, I mean, people make mistakes, you know, even in the military we make mistakes. But if you submit an invoice to get paid, and if you don't follow up with it, you may not get paid, you know. And it's hard for folks like us that have served in the military to have to remind somebody, hey, am I going to get paid here? You know? So it's very, but you have to overcome it. And you have to, because it's just the way business is done in my short experience here on the outside world.
And I want to transition in a moment to talk about FitOps and also the other work that you're doing. But one last question. I know you've already spoken to this quite a bit, but I want to make the most of this wealth of experience. So I'm thinking of both the listener who may be on active duty and may be saying, "Hey, I want to go to the top. I want to be the best I can within the military." And I'm thinking of the listener who maybe they served 3 years in the military and maybe they've been out for 6 years and they're in investment banking or consulting or whatever else, and they want to reach the pinnacle of their field. I just wanted to give space for any other advice you have for someone who wants to really flex and stretch their wings and achieve the most that they can in whatever their chosen career path is.
So, four things. Dream big. Think about what you want to do. Think about, I want to maximize my potential, whether I'm in the military or whether I'm in the corporate world or wherever. So, dream big, okay? Then set lofty, attainable goals based off of your dreams. What are those goals? They have to be lofty, but they also have to be attainable. Then visualize it. Visualize you accomplishing those goals and your dreams are coming true. And then you have to go out and actualize it. And that means put in the work and put in the effort and put in the time to get it done and reach those goals. And throughout all of that, a key phrase I use is do not get lost in your own museum. What I mean by that is we've all done things in our past that we were extremely proud of and that are a big accomplishment or, you know, something that we've done that we are extremely proud of. That's all fine and dandy, but we can't be stuck in the past. We have to focus on the current, the present, and the future. Now, we can certainly reference what we've done in the past and draw on our experiences, you know, like you graduating from the Naval Academy. That's a great accomplishment. But if you lived as, you know, Ensign Justin, you know, you probably wouldn't be where you're at right now. But, and for me as well, one of my greatest accomplishments was graduating Ranger School in 1996. But if I stayed permanently in 1996, I would have never made it to where I was in 2015. So I call it, be proud of your accomplishments, be proud of what you've done, but do not get lost in your own museum, meaning admiring what you've done in the past so much that you become irrelevant and you become complacent, and in the end, you become marginalized with what's going on in the current environment or the future environment. So dream big, set lofty, attainable goals, visualize, actualize, and don't get lost in your own museum.
That's so fantastic. You know, I'll say on the museum piece, I think that's such a great phrase. I've never heard that before. I can pinpoint in my own life the times where I did get caught up. And for me, it led to entitlement. It's like, well, I achieved this, therefore I deserve it. And I think it's so powerful coming from you, John, because, you know, the brief interaction we've had, I'm like, man, the sense I get is like you achieved incredible heights and you left the military shot out of a cannon in pursuit of what was next. And I have to admit, I think if I had achieved something like that, I think I might have been more passive or reactive or this sense of like, come to me world, bow down before me. But I also want to call out for listeners, you know, I would add to this museum, I think that I have been caught up just as much in my own accomplishments as I've been caught up in my own failures. And I think there's some component of this museum about, man, those colossal mistakes that we all make, like not being mired in that, not having that be your legacy, but having that be this learning experience and not being caught up in the sense of self-pity, but being able to mobilize and move beyond that particular exhibit in the museum onto creating something new.
Yeah, and I would just to finish off that thread, I would also, so I'm a big Urban Dictionary guy, okay? Mm-hmm. So one thing that I've always encountered, and anybody that is successful in what they're doing will encounter, and it's these people I call the professional jealots, okay? Meaning professional jealousy in whatever we do is alive and well. And we've got to be cognizant of that in the military and in the business and corporate world, that they're out there. And we cannot let those people detract us from dreaming big and setting those lofty, attainable goals and visualizing and going out and actualizing them and making them all come to fruition. We want to try and help people that may, you know, be a little jealous and everything, but in the end, we can't get caught up in trying to get pulled down into potential mediocrity by someone because they're jealous of the accomplishments that we're going out and getting. And I say that with all humility, okay? Obviously, in everything we do, there's going to be differing opinions on how to do things and stuff like that. But when someone is, you know, trying to trip you up on your road to success because they're not as focused or as motivated or purpose-driven as you are, then you just have to be cognizant of that and not let those kind of people stop you from reaching your ultimate goal.
Well, one of the things I love too in your advice on those four steps, and I was writing those down, you know, just for my personal benefit in my notes here, but I love the first two are really getting crisp in our own dream, because I can get caught chasing the dreams of others. But yes, I love sir. I love that visualization piece, and I'm new to this, but I have this. Oh, sorry, one second. I have this. One of the things I've been visualizing is getting this vacation home for my family, and there's a whole backstory on that. But the reason I think this is powerful is the other night I had a lot of work to do in the evening, and you know, I did not feel like working. And for whatever reason, I pulled out my phone, I pulled out the real estate app Zillow, and I was looking at vacation homes in Steamboat Springs where I want to eventually own something. And 3 minutes of looking at these photos, it was like the juice and the leverage I needed to be like, absolutely, all right, I'm doubling down, because it's about something. And for me, you know, I'll just say the dream and the aspiration, it will be great to achieve those things. But what I'm realizing is the juice that gives me to push myself more and to be more, that's almost like the goal in and of itself, regardless of attaining whatever this lofty thing is that I'm going after.
Yeah. I tell people, you know, an analogy I use is dream of taking over the world and settle for Australia. Okay? So the point being is dream big, but you have to set lofty and attainable goals. You know, I dreamed my whole life that I wanted to be an NFL superstar, you know, but, you know, setting a lofty, attainable goal to get there, I didn't have the athletic ability and talent to be that. So there's no attainable goal I could have got that got me to be an NFL superstar. So I have to understand who I am, what I'm about, and dream big about that, you know, and then set lofty attainable goals. For me, it was one day I wanted my wife, Sandra, and I to have a retirement home that we could be proud of and, you know, look back and say, hey, we've done great things to provide for our children and everything. So we used to dream big back then. And I will tell you, for 4 years in Washington, D.C., my wife was looking at Zillow, looking at houses, okay? As I was traveling all over the world, and sometimes she would go with me. I mean, you heard, she has been on USO trips with me to Iraq and Afghanistan and places like that. But all the while, she was looking at that Zillow app every day and dreaming. And so our lofty attainable goal was to get a house that we could be proud of. And so, you know, we visualized it, and now we are actualizing it because we're in that home that we were looking for. So that's my recommendation to anybody out there, is if you don't dream big, in the end, you know, you may not reach your untapped potential.
I love both the take over the world Australia piece, but also the NFL piece. And I think, you know, one thing I've been thinking a lot about lately is making friends with reality. And again, my experience is I get a lot of marketing messages about, you know, just go and do it. You know, Nike, just do it. Just go be the NFL player. And, you know, like even right now in my life, I've got an 18-month-old son. And as I'm sure John can relate to, it's a very all-encompassing thing. And so a lot of my life right now is making friends with reality and saying like, okay, there are many things I want to do. And the reality of my situation is this is what I can do. And that's not meant to be an excuse of just sitting back and being lazy. But I think we can sometimes, especially military people, we can take it a little bit too far of like, I'm going to be the father I want to this 18-month-old, and I'm going to be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company right now. And it lacks a little bit of intellectual honesty around what's achievable. And so that's why I love the way that you put that, the lofty, attainable goal. Sometimes I struggle with the attainable piece and get a little bit too caught up in the lofty piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But that's my advice to anybody out there, especially in the military, are those that are trying to make it in the corporate world. And the worst thing you can do is get lost in your own museum. We all have these I love me walls, you know? I mean, we put something on the wall, you know, like I have my master's degree certificate on the wall. I've got some military stuff on the wall and everything. But that's my museum, and I can't get caught being lost in here when I should be out going after goals that I want to attain now. Even after 38 years in the military, I still have personal and professional goals that I want to attain now. And in order for me to do that, I got to be focused on what's going on now and how to be successful in the current environment, and then be prepared for any changes in the future environment and change with that environment, so I continue to be relevant and I can continue to do good things in that future environment.
That's awesome. Well, let's switch gears a little bit. Talk to us about how the opportunity with FitOps came about.
So I've always been someone that has been a fit guy. I've always focused on being ready. I call it being ready for the worst day of your life. And for a combat soldier, the worst day of your life obviously is in combat against a numerically superior enemy, or the enemy has had the initiative and they've attacked you and you have to respond and you have casualties and all these other things. And so I realized that in order for us to be more mentally and emotionally ready for the worst day of our lives, that the foundation was being physically ready. And so I coined a phrase that I still use to this day called PME hard, meaning being physically, mentally, and emotionally hard. I first came up with this phrase in about the 2006 timeframe, and just used one of my talking points during the surge in Iraq in 07 and 08 to my 4,000 soldier striker brigade, that this is the way we need to be to deal with these insidious enemies of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, in the Palm Groves, and in Baghdad, and in Bakuba, and all the other cities that we were fighting in. And as I continued to move up, I continued to talk about this. And at the pinnacle of my career as the SEAC, I was responsible for the chairman's total force fitness program, meaning making sure that across all of the services that we had a fit, ready, and lethal force. And so I really focused on the PME hard concept then, but I was working with, you know, military community and family policy at DO, Department of Defense, the Defense Health Agency, the services, the world-class athlete program, and all these others to make sure we were fit. And so when I retired, I knew I wanted to do something in the fitness industry, and I wanted to do things to continue to assist people, whether they're in the military or veterans. And someone introduced me to Matt Hessen and FitOps. And when I looked at what the charter was for FitOps, I said, this is PME hard right here. What we do at FitOps now, you know, is to, you know, get after the epidemic of veteran suicide, but also to provide veterans and transitioning service members the same purpose they had on active duty through making them elite fitness trainers, or being CDFOs, what we call Certified Veteran Fitness Operative. And it immediately, Matt and I, when we started talking, we immediately hit it off. We're like-minded individuals, and it was just a fit that I was so comfortable with, and I absolutely enjoyed being with FitOps. One, because Matt's a veteran himself, even though he's an artilleryman, I won't hold that against him, all right? And our director of operations, Harrison Johnson, is a former soldier. And we have veterans throughout the organization. So when you go back to that transition from active duty to you know, business and corporate world, it was a natural fit for me because I was around like-minded, like-focused kind of people. And that's why I'm so honored to be on the team at FitOps and to lead the advisory.
And for listeners, I'll put in the show notes, episode 358 is when we sat down with Matt to learn about more about FitOps. But what would you want listeners to know about FitOps and how they might get involved?
So they can go to our website, fitopsfoundation.org, and they can get more information. There's several ways. So if there's a transitioning service member or a veteran that wants to go to one of our boot camps and become a certified veteran fitness operative, you can go on there and apply for it. If there's folks that want to assist us through fundraising or things like that, you can go on there and do the same thing. And I would recommend anybody out there that is in the corporate world that is looking to assist veterans to reach out to Matt or myself or Harrison on the FedOps page and make a point to come down and watch what happens at the boot camps we run here. Because we take men and women that may have lost their purpose being out of the military and they're looking for their way to get back. And all of a sudden we put them in this program and they all of a sudden are not just surviving anymore, they're thriving. And they leave out of here with these credentials in the fitness industry that will allow them to be marketable when they go out. And it could lead to maybe owning their own gym, or it could be doing something in the nutrition world, or it could be a trainer of other veterans out there. So go to the FedOps website and you can get all the information you need. And we are constantly looking to build on our boot camps so we get more veterans in there trained and everything. But also we're looking more for corporate partners to assist us. I will tell you, John Cena, WWE superstar, has been one of our best donors that we've had. And he is a guy that really genuinely is passionate about taking care of our veterans and to get after this epidemic of veteran suicide. Because I think we all know, Justin, that when someone leaves the military and all of a sudden they let their physical being go, and then if they start having challenges with relationships or with finances, you know, and then they're dealing with mental and emotional stressors from being in the military, they may have PTSD or traumatic brain injury or something. And all of a sudden, because they've let themselves go physically, mentally, emotionally, all of a sudden they start going downhill. They start self-medicating. They may be abusing alcohol. And then you throw firearms or stuff like that in there. And pretty soon they could be on a road that there's no coming back from. So what we're trying to do is at FedOps, and what I've been trying to do for the past 15 years was PME hard, is to build that foundation physically that will aid the mental and emotional fitness. And as long as we're continuing to give veterans purpose and in our efforts at FedOps through making them certified elite fitness trainers, we've seen the success that they have when they move on and do other things.
That's awesome. And for listeners, be sure to check out episode 358. It was extremely moving to hear this very unique approach of addressing the physical, mental, and emotional needs of our community in a powerful way, as John talked about, to help people rediscover purpose and to find that community that they may be missing from the military. What else would you want listeners to know about what you're up to? Because you've got quite a lot going on.
So, I've got to be frank here, all right, Justin. Being an enlisted guy, even though I was the senior enlisted guy in the Department of Defense, there's still kind of a stigma when you get ready to transition. I don't know how many, friends of mine that are general officers and flag officers. Well, first of all, let me paint the picture for you. Pentagon River entrance that overlooks kind of the Potomac River. You go in that first entrance, the immediate right is the chairman's office. The immediate left is the tank, which is where high-level meetings happen for the chairman, the SecDef, and when the president, when he comes over. The office right next door was mine. So anytime all of these high-ranking individuals would go to the tank for whatever, they would just stop by my office to say hello or whatever, or I would be in meetings with them in there. And too many times they were asking me things like, so what are you going to do when you retire? You're going to go work at Lowe's. You're going to go work at Range Control on Joint Base Lewis and McChord. What are you going to do? And I thought, okay, you know, they're looking at me as an enlisted guy thinking this is the only thing I'm capable of doing, you know. Don't get me wrong. Anybody that does those kind of jobs are honorable jobs, and God bless them for doing them. But I thought to myself, there's a stigma here in terms of an enlisted person going out and having the same kind of lofty, attainable goals that maybe a general has. So finally, it was the day before my retirement ceremony, and you know, I was getting a little irritated hearing this all the time. And so, you know, this one 3-star walks in. I won't tell you what service he was from, but I consider him a very close friend. And he asked me the same question. So what are you going to do now? Are you going to go get a GS job on, you know, Joint Base Lewis-McChord, a government service job or something? And finally, I told him, I said, you know something, General? You're going to have to compete with me in corporate America, okay? I'm going to come out, and I'm going to do things that make me marketable so that I can compete against you. And so I didn't want to be that person that, you know, I didn't want to grind. So when I retired, I didn't want to be doing the same kind of, you know, 60-hour week that I was doing in the military. But I wanted to do something that kept me, you know, having purpose and everything. So I opened my own consulting company. And oddly enough, it's called PME Hard Consulting. And it's my consulting company is designed to provide solutions for leadership and human performance. And now I'm working for 7 different organizations besides FitOx, some in the fitness industry, like Defend USA Compression Gear, Alpha Warrior 360 Gyms. And I'm also working as a brand ambassador for Hiring Our Heroes, nonprofit for the Chamber of Commerce that assists with veteran employment. And I'm actually consulting for a movie production company in Hollywood as a military consultant. And I'm missing one here. I got so many jobs, huh? But, and I am a brand ambassador for eyewear safety systems, the ones that make eye protection for the military. So I'm doing a lot of things. And I'm also a board member, besides FedOps Foundation, the Patriot Foundation, which is a foundation that provides scholarships for the military, Allied Forces Foundation that assists wounded, ill, and injured, not just U.S. troops, but allied NATO kind of troops, with providing them purpose through activities and things like that. So I'm staying, and then finally, Warrior Suicide Prevention, which is a foundation totally dedicated to getting after this 22 a day veteran suicide. So I'm doing a lot of little things. I'm staying busy, but all of it is great work that I truly enjoy doing, and it also allows me to have ample time for my wife, my kids, and my grandkids. So, and then I'm still training, you know, like a beast. You know, I consider myself 56 years young. I'm still eating right, training right, recovering right, and making sure that as I talk about being PME hard and talk about it FitOps, you know, having that physical foundation first, that I better be leading by example, or I could potentially be hypocritical in what I'm saying.
I love your embodiment of that phrase you said earlier. I've always prepared for the worst day of your life, but I love the example you are of someone who is, you know, the analogy I think of is when they say with tennis, like you swing through the ball, and it's like you swing through your military career, you achieved greatness and you have continued on to greatness. And whether it's family or an incredibly robust professional life, you're a great example of defining, continuously defining new purpose. But I really want to just highlight in yellow what you said, because what you said about what I would call the maybe even the subconscious bias that we as military members have of officer versus enlisted. And this is good timing in that the episode that preceded this, we talked about race and gender in the military and had a very honest discussion around all the subtle ways where that may affect our thinking. We don't realize it. And I'll own for myself, you know, I left as an 03 from the military. I'm 10 years out. There is still this natural hierarchy that pops up without me realizing it, of like, oh, this person is an officer and I have assumptions, and this person is an enlisted and they have assumptions. And I will say that one of the great things about Beyond the Uniform is sticking dynamite in that assumption. And I'm thinking of Christian Sands, who I just interviewed, one of the most impressive entrepreneurs I've ever met, you know, got out as an E3, you know, and has achieved more than I could ever aspire to as an entrepreneur, or Jacob Martinez building this multi-hundred person company. And so I would encourage listeners, regardless of what side of the service you served in, and regardless of how long ago that is, to really take a look for yourself of the ways that these biases might show up and impact your decision. And I would encourage you to really challenge that, because I have found, again, 360 plus of these interviews, I have found no distinction in the level of accomplishment by branch of service, by gender, by rank in the military, by officer enlisted. These are kind of fabricated constructs that don't, to me, seem to hold a lot of merit in terms of what someone is capable of. It's often much more, it has nothing to do with what someone can achieve.
Yeah, and you know, what's interesting, Justin, is that since 9/11 in the military, when 9/11 kicked off, all across the services, the number of true leadership positions that were title leadership positions were overwhelmingly officer. It was almost 2-to-1 officer to enlisted leader positions. And now those positions, because of the things we've done to empower our enlisted leaders, and when I talk about the greatest competitive advantage, nothing comes close across the world in terms of our non-commissioned officer and petty officer corps, the true backbone of the United States military. And that is our greatest competitive advantage, because commanders, through their orders process and everything, can allow for disciplined initiative by those non-commissioned officers and petty officers within the commander's intent. They can apply some agile and adaptive thinking, and they can accomplish the missions that commanders and officers want them to do through a method that commander officer may not have done, but it's still a method that is legal, moral, and ethical, and it got the job done. And the more we do that, the more we will have decentralized advantages over any kind of threat. So now those leadership positions at one time were 2-to-1, now it's 58% enlisted. Around, you know, we have eliminated some of these officer leader positions and switched it in. So 58% of the entire force right now that are leaders are non-commissioned officers and petty officers, where before 9/11, it was almost flipped the other way in terms of officers. That shows you how far we've gone in terms of empowering, through trust and empowerment for our enlisted force. So I agree with you. Whether you're an officer or enlisted, go out and do you, and be the best thing you can be, and continue to get after those lofty, attainable goals.
I love it. Well, I'm a big fan of cigars. And when you have a particularly good cigar, you call it a knuckle burner, because even though it's burning your knuckles, you keep on smoking. And I feel like this conversation was one of those. John, thank you for your example. Thank you for the time that you shared. And thank you for not only nearly 40 years of service, but just crushing that and going out and using your post-service career both as an example of continuing to achieve, but also continuing to give back. So thank you for all of that.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you for your service to our country. And thank you for continuing to showcase folks on the Beyond the Uniform podcast here. It was my honor to be here. I appreciate it.
Surface.
Beyond the Uniform is written and produced by me, Justin Nasiri, with help from our Chief of Staff, Steve Bain, our editor, Kathleen Dillon, and our Head of Social Media, Janelle Hanf. We are an all-volunteer organization and would greatly appreciate your help in any of the following three ways. First of all, spread the word. Beyond the Uniform has over 360 podcast episodes and 15 on-demand webinars, all offered for free. Help us spread the word on social media and military bases, or whatever gets the resource in front of the men and women who need it. Positive reviews on iTunes go a long way towards this as well. Second of all, sponsorship. Beyond the Uniform relies on financial sponsorship to keep us going. There is so much more we'd like to do as well, but just don't have nearly the resources to do so. If you know of a company that would advertise in any way with Beyond the Uniform, please send them our way. Third of all, donations. If you're in a financial position to donate, you can find more information on the support section of our website. At our website, beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find over 360 episodes categorized by industry, functional role, and more. You'll also find both free and for-purchase resources that take a deeper dive on topics related to career growth. Thank you for your support as we aim to help members of the military community thrive in their post-military career and life.